is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air. In West Philadelphia, born and raised, on the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, shooting some b-ball outside of the school. When a couple of guys who were up to no good started making trouble in my neighborhood, I got in one little fight and my mom got scared and said, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air." I whistled for a cab, and when it came near, the license plate said fresh and it had dice in the mirror. If anything, I could say that this cab was rare, but I thought, nah, forget it, yo, home to Bel Air. I pulled up to the house about 7 or 8, and I yelled to the cabbie, "Yo, home, smell you later." Looked at my kingdom, I was finally there to sit on my throne as the Prince of Bel Air.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Fundamentals Podcast. I am your host, Harley. Joining me on this episode for a deep dive into the iconic 90s sitcom, The Fresh Prince of Bel Air, it's co-hosts of the Flicks Watcher and the Wire Stripped podcasts, Kobe Omanaka. Kobe was kind enough to take some time out of his very busy schedule to sit down with me and talk about this beloved sitcom of the 90s. We get into so much of this show. It's one of those shows that's just had a massive impact since its release and in reruns and even a remake, which we touch a little bit upon. Full disclosure, neither of us have actually seen the full remake, but we do talk a little bit about it in this premise and how it actually leans into some of the themes that were always present in the sitcom of the 90s. There's lots that we get into, from favorite characters and moments, as I said, big themes, and so much more in this episode. So, without further ado, let's get straight to it. This is The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with Kobe Omanaka. Hello, Kobe, and welcome to the Fundamentals Podcast.
Hello, hello. How are you doing?
Very well, sir. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. And thank you for bringing what I may add is, I think, a long overdue topic. As I said to you before we started recording, I was hoping someone would bring this one up when we did sitcoms last year, but sadly they didn't. But you've come in now and you've rescued us by bringing us The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So I guess to kick us off, I want to know, what was your introduction to this show and what sort of impact did it have on you at the time?
It was that kind of sweet spot from coming back from school and before doing homework, where there's that kind of that kind of TV, which was occupied sometimes by Star Trek, but then sometimes by like Aeon Flux, is after Biker Grove, but before like EastEnders. When for me TV would get a bit boring as a youngster, but it was just it was just a standard after school TV show to watch. And I find it kind of weird because that's not prime time, but like in the UK at least. But I don't know how it went out in the States. I don't know what kind of slots it went out in the States. I think it would have been given a bigger slot or a more important or imposing slot, but it's still in the UK it resonated. And I think they perhaps picked the right demographic to put that in, because I think if it had gone out at like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, it might have got lost in the weeds with other people, with other again competing against other shows at that time slot.
It's funny, I had the similar thing actually growing up. I remember the same thing of it was on around the sort of 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening kind of mark, which now you think about it, you're right, that is a bit unusual when you consider most sort of new sitcoms like now, you know, when they come out, like you said, if they're on telly, they're usually past the 7, 8 o'clock margin. Yeah. So, I don't know why they put it there, but I think you're right. It definitely reached a younger audience for sure, right?
Yeah, well, that's it. And I think maybe because of that slot, that time slot, when people talk about sitcoms, I don't necessarily think of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air as a sitcom. I mean, 100% is. And at the same, I kind of think of it more in this kind of, I don't know if you can call it a genre, but things like, what's it called with Zach Morris? Set in Bayside, Saved by the Bell.
Saved by the Bell,
Saved by the Bell and the California Dreams.
Okay.
I kind of put, even though those are sitcoms, I sometimes feel like more childish sitcoms or more youthful sitcoms. And that's slightly differentiated from, you know, Frasier or Cheers or something else. As a sitcom, even Friends, you know. I feel it kind of sits in different parts of my brain as sitcoms.
Okay. No, that makes sense. And yeah, it is something I was just thinking about it, because it's from 1990 to 96.
Yeah.
So it was kind of right in between a time when other shows that I've covered on this podcast before, like your Seinfelds, your Friends, stuff like that, were out. You're right. This feels so completely distinct from those, just in the tone and in the way it's set, and also in the cast, right? It's an extremely diverse cast for a show like this, which I think is awesome.
Well, is it diverse, or is it just black?
Well, it's black, but the reason why I bring it up is because it's something we talked about. It sort of pricked my memory a bit.
Yeah.
When we talked about things like Friends and Seinfeld and other shows like that, that was something that has been criticized for at the time, and also sort of retrospectively, is, yeah, it's a very white cast. There's not a lot of diversity in those shows. And there were lots of other sitcoms that followed suit. Whereas here it feels like you've got something. It's like, well, here's a completely black cast and family. And it's sort of giving you a completely different point of view and representation that I think just, it seems, wasn't around at the time.
I think, I mean, there definitely was that. There were sitcoms with predominantly black characters, or TV shows with predominantly black characters. In the UK, you had like Desmond's at the same time. Mm. You know, the US is the Cosby Show, whether you choose to mention it or not. And I was thinking recently, even like in the UK, Red Dwarf was, you know, 50%, until Crichton, predominantly black cast, until Crichton rocked up, and then is 50-50. And that was, and these are like nicely and effortlessly like predominantly non-white casts. And I sometimes think about that as a kid growing up, that we did have that kind of representation a bit more. And what I feel kind of sorry for is a lot of my friends were from Pakistani background or Indian background, and I couldn't think of any TV shows that we'd watch that have those guys front and center, or represent those guys front and center. Until Goodness Gracious Me came out, which is a bit kind of later. But even then, I'm still struggling to think of anything else more than that.
Yeah, now that you mention it, yeah, that's true. That's not a demographic I think it's been given. It's just as it's just yet. But who knows? Who knows the future? But yeah, I guess something like this, though, I mean, in terms of that, and it is something I think is a really important theme, and I got the impression watching it, and I say this as like a white English kid, you know, living in the UK. I remember at the time thinking, like, I was quite amazed at some of the ways that they handled a lot of things. Like, it never shied away from the issue of race, because it's also deals with class and race, right? Because you've got the whole premise is Will Smith coming from Philadelphia and a sort of what we would call like a working class kind of background to his rich family who are up in the Hollywood Hills. And it feels like there were several episodes and moments where they really sort of took a moment to address that, you know, so the audience and kind of go like, oh yeah, we know this is unusual and that we're going to have to talk about a few things here. I mean, what did you think about some of that, the way the show handled those moments?
I mean, all sitcoms have their teaching point episodes, don't they? I think I always thought it was quite interesting what they would do. I think what would often happen is Will would be the counterpoint to Carlton in a way, where Will would be the one saying, you know, this isn't how the majority of black people in the States experience life. And I thought it was quite nice the way they would juxtapose what Will's experiences and his thoughts are versus Carlton, who's a bit more, he's had a better life or opportunities than Will had growing up, and he perhaps hadn't seen race hadn't played a factor into his experiences really. Whereas for Will, it's like, yeah, dude, you need to think about, just take a second, think about what's going on. And I think they were always kind of appreciated, those kind of sessions.
Yeah, Yeah. I mean, just one episode that I can't remember the names of all of them, but there was one that stood out to me as a storyline. I remember watching it at the time, and I've seen it a couple of times since in reruns. I think there's an episode where Carlton gets pulled over by a police officer, and Will kind of immediately is like, oh no, this isn't going to go well. It's like, dude, he's like, listen to me, listen to me. I've been in this situation. And Carlton's like, don't be stupid. You know, it's fine. And unfortunately, the outcome is you have got basically a racist police officer.
Yeah.
And Carlton's really like shaken by this and kind of like, oh, this never happens. But it's a really interesting point where they suddenly bring those two worldviews together, and Will's kind of like, no, you don't, like, as you say, it's like your view of the world is really rare compared to most people in, you know, with the same color skin as you, basically in the same country as you. And I really admire TV shows that take moments like that to address big issues and just sort of make characters sit in that. And it's not played off for laughs or like a cheap gag. It's like a really serious point where they just kind of make you sit in it as an audience and make you think.
Yeah. And that's that end of that episode, Uncle Phil comes to save them. And it's kind of amazing the way he kind of steps into the police cell and it's like,
yeah,
you didn't call your lawyer. You didn't call their lawyer because I'm their lawyer. You didn't call their father because I'm their father. Where was that phone call? And like completely rips the police to shreds there. Which kind of showed the tour de force of Uncle Phil, even though he's like the butt of a lot of jokes, he's still like, you know, they're rich for a reason because he's damn good at his job.
Sit down.
Hey, you don't talk to my wife like that.
Now, wait a minute, buddy. Who the hell do you think you're talking
to? Who the hell do you think you're talking to?
What's going on here?
Can I help you, sir?
I'm Henry Firth.
Good news, Mr. Firth. Your car is safe and sound, and we've got the perpetrators.
Those aren't the perpetrators. Those are my partner's son and nephew.
Partner?
Legal partner. I've got a few questions for you. When you got this alleged confession from these two young men, did they have a lawyer present? No, because I'm their lawyer. Did you notify their parents? No, because we're their parents. So, officer, don't tell us to wait, and don't tell us to sit down. Just open that damn cell and let those two boys out of there, or I'm going to tie this place up with so much litigation that your grandchildren are going to need lawyers.
Yeah, and his job as well, being a lawyer and then a judge as well. It's like, that. I think that's amazing as well. It's not only is he rich, but he's got a moral compass. And I got to say, James Avery, I think, as Philip Banks, does an amazing job in the role. Like, he's just, like you said, he as someone who takes a lot of jokes, especially from Will, who's always wisecracking at him. But like you said, he always gets these moments every now and then where he comes in and just bulldozes over somebody in a way that is just incredible to watch.
And I wonder if, had they redone The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in the comedic style, in the pure sitcom style, and this is kind of allusion to the Bel-Air show, which is a bit more of a less comical take on the experience of getting caught in a gang fight. If they were to redo it from scratch, you know, the Quincy Jones score, the kind of canned laughter, would they still have Uncle Phil be the butt of all the jokes being fat? You know, I think
that's a good point.
It's one of the ways the world's kind of changed now. That was, I remember that at the time being like laughing my ass off. One of the things that I think has aged friends like milk is when they laugh at Fat Monica, for example.
True.
And I wonder if they do that. Still, I mean, he'd still be a big guy, he'd still be fat, but then that not be the sole source of Will's like humor or snipes at him.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do wonder if, as you say, with the benefit of hindsight, would they have changed a few things like that? I'd imagine they would.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe. I think in fairness to him as well, the way the character always seems to take it as well.
Maybe he's just resigned to that nonsense.
Yeah. that could just be the way it is. Yeah. But I thought an amazing performance, and you know, he sadly passed away, didn't he, a couple of years ago?
Yeah,
I remember the outpouring online for that was just, it was really lovely to see, you know, because it's that sort of father figure character that, you know, when they're in a TV show like this, they kind of become a part of your lives on a regular basis. And as we say, he was not only a role model, but he was a very positive figure as well. Like, I feel like every episode you got where it was Uncle Phil centric, he always seemed to be dealing with a moral quandary as a black man in a position of power. You know, I remember a whole storyline, wasn't it, where he's going for judge and one of his friends is up against him, or he's looking to take the job off him, and the guy's corrupt, and he has this whole thing of do I do this because it's the right thing, but also am I affecting the community that I'm a part of by taking down a black judge? You know, and I just thought, again, that's really heavy stuff to put on a primetime TV show, but they always gave it to him, and he always seemed to play those roles and those dilemmas really well.
Yeah, I mean, the show is layered, and it did touch about those things, and it touched on, I think in later series, about Will and his separation from his mother and his parents as well.
Yeah,
it became a bit more serious, but it was it was always funny, and it did slingshot Will Smith into superstardom. And we should say this has been recorded 4 days after the Smith slapping event, which is beyond insane, hilarious, obnoxious. I don't know which adjective you want to use.
Ah, man, do you know what? I knew this would come up because we booked this in. So peep behind the curtain, people listening. Yeah, we're recording this, as you say, days after that's happened. Mm. We obviously booked this in way before the Oscars.
Yeah.
I feel like it's changed my sort of thought process going into this episode. Talking about Will, because he is the central character. He's essentially what this whole, you could argue that this show was really a vehicle for him. Mm. You know, he was the star of the show, and he's amazing at it. He's in it for obviously the full run. He gets all these amazing jokes, but he also gets some really heavy dramatic moments. And as you say, he then went on to just become a Hollywood titan.
Well,
how do you feel about him now? Who knows?
Winning the Oscar for best male actor, and something he's been vying for.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of overshadowed by the slap that he won.
It is, man. I mean, what's your sort of take on that? I'm just curious.
On him winning Hollywood actor or the slap?
All of it, really. I think the Oscar's long overdue, isn't it? Let's be honest. He's had an amazing career.
Will Smith is one of those funny ones where I love him as a person so much, but I think a lot of the film choices he's been in over the past 10 years have really fallen short of being interesting. Aladdin, for example, I'm like, dude. the last one I really, really liked. I haven't seen King Richard yet, and it was on my list before he won. Perhaps to be honest, it's still about the same place on my list anyway. The last one I really, really liked beforehand was Hitch. I think was the last one of his which I really got into,
and I'd seen
Seven Pounds. Mm-hmm. I think Pursuit of Happiness is one of a lot of people I know's favorite films. It doesn't resonate with me that much. I think I can see why they like it a lot, but. I don't think, for me, he hasn't hit the mark over the past 10 years. I didn't really like Bad Boys 3 that much. The original Bad Boys is one of my favourite films ever. I didn't like Bad Boys 2 that much. So it kind of feel like very, very few people have got a bad word to say about Will.
Mm.
And I think that was one of the most shocking things for me, is that I cannot remember him swearing. It wasn't the slap, it was the keep your... my wife's name out of your mouth.
Bit. Yeah.
And I'm self-censoring there because this is a PG podcast. And the way he said it twice and with venom and force. And I was like, oh my life. Okay. This is definitely a serious piece here. So it set into my head, into a lot of people's heads, a different kind of Will Smith to the one that the persona he'd been crafting for the past, 25 coming to 3 decades.
True. And I think to kind of borrow a little bit from a previous guest of this show, Clarice Lowry, who wrote a really good article, I think, at the time when this all came out, we don't really know the full extent of what he's feeling, what was going on.
No,
obviously. I've been listening to a lot of the discussion around it just because it's interesting. And as you say, I think all of us are really shocked by it, because especially when you look back at something like Fresh Prince, it felt like you were kind of... There's so much of that show is carried by his charisma.
Yeah.
And then you see him in interviews for films going forward, and it feels like it's the same person. So I think we all kind of assumed that that's who he is, right?
Yeah.
He's this charismatic kind of fun guy, and you know, yeah, he's human, he's gonna have his moments, but as you say, that seemed so out of character. But then we don't really know his character, I guess, is the point to that.
Evidently,
exactly. And I don't know, firstly I just look at it and think it wasn't cool, but it happens, I guess. And I don't know, it's a whole other podcast in itself about
it,
you know, whether I've listened to someone today actually talking about the whole thing of, you know, is the comedian hosting side of it done? And who knows? Who knows what will happen? Whatever happens, this is definitely going to go down as one of the most memorable moments, I think, in all of Hollywood.
I do slightly worry for the comedian aspects. But I do also think, I mean, a lot of the stuff Ricky Gervais used to say at the Golden Globes was super close to the line.
I think I was over the line most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. But
deliberately so.
So I wonder if that kind of stuff will continue.
Yeah.
But also, look, some of my favourite comedians, I hate a lot of the stuff that, you know, they've done recently. So, like,
sure.
David Chappelle, I love him. I think when he's got me rolling around in stitches, it's amazing. But then he's sometimes digging into trans and LGBT stuff. I'm like, dude, you're funny without it. And some of the stuff that Jimmy Carr's done recently, I'm like, I'm watching his stand-up and 45 minutes, I'm laughing my ass off. And then I'm like, oh. Why are you being down on disabled people? What's that about? And some, I just think they don't need it to be funny. So why bother? Chris Rock is an extremely funny guy, and his last show, Tambourine, I loved to bits, and he was kind of beating on himself more than anyone else. Talking about his personal problems, which I thought was really candid. So you know, we know these guys can be funny. You know, Ricky Gervais can be funny. You know, Jimmy Carr can be funny. You know, David Chappelle can be funny. You don't need to punch down to people. To be funny.
True.
So,
I know something someone pointed out, because that, you know, obviously the whole center of the controversy is the joke made at Jada, and then people pointing out, well, she's got alopecia.
Mm.
You know, there's a reason why she's got short hair.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I didn't know that watching the video. I just thought, oh, that was a niche reference to make to like a late 90s movie and whatever. And it's since been pointed out that, I think it's been said, like, we don't know. Again, we can just speculate in, but Chris Rock didn't know that was the case. And I think something that kind of goes in his favor there is that he did make a documentary a few years ago about, you know, that dealt with black women in hair and hair loss and things like that. And he took it really seriously. So you'd like to think if he went through all the effort of making a serious documentary commenting on something like that, that he wouldn't just make a flippant joke at someone's expense.
For a gag,
I feel like it was just a simple misunderstanding that just clearly got blown way out of hand. it's interesting, isn't it? Because that whole thing does kind of shine a certain light now. Even like you look back on things like this, for example, like the Fresh Prince, you look at Will Smith, and you sort of look at him in a whole new light now, and sort of wonder, like, yeah, that charismatic, charming, quippy guy that we saw. It's you kind of wonder like how much of that was him and how much of it is,
I don't know,
and to be fair, that's actors' jobs, right?
They're
playing characters.
I mean, but yeah, Will Smith as a character, as a person, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and you can see that there's clear lines between Fresh Prince of Bel-Air to Men in Black to Wild West to Hitch. And then when it starts to get a bit serious, I think that's where it got a bit harder for people to kind of grasp him as a personality. So when it came to £7 and Ali, who's amazing, actually. So I think that's when people are like, he can really do this if he wants to. I think did he get nominated for Ali?
That's a good question.
But I think that's where, again, he's playing a charismatic person, and he's nominated because he's playing a charismatic, well-famous person well. And typically that's what the Academy likes, and it's almost a shoo-in for that. And this is, you know, he got the Oscar for King Richard.
Yeah.
Playing Venus and Serena Williams' dad, a real person who had, you know, kind of real tour de force kind of angle on life and how to help his family. So I'm not sure what my direction of line of thought is here, but it's a lot of Will Smith's films have been, at least in the first half of his career, was like, Independence Day is Will Smith with it's Will Smith playing the character in the film rather than him playing a role almost. Bad Boys, you know, again, it's Will Smith from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but with a gun.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And that's something you find, actually, when we talk about a lot of these sitcoms, is especially when they get to be this successful, because this one is, I'd argue it's up there with, like, your Seinfelds, your Friends, you know, it's millions of viewers, huge, huge success. As you say, like, pushed his clearly already, you know, successful career at that point to another level that I'm sure he didn't imagine. But then you kind of just become that character, right? And that's like, you know, for example, for me, if I ever watch a movie and one of the cast of Friends turns up, it's really hard for me to see them as anyone other than, oh, it's Rachel from Friends. Or, you know, and that's not fair to the actor, because you think, well, no, they're just doing their job. They're here for a role. And as you say, someone like Will Smith, Ali was the first thing I thought of, is like when you see that film, you realize, like, oh no, he's got range, and he's clearly trying really hard to step up to another side of his career and be like, I don't just want to be remembered as the funny guy from that show. You know, like at that point, it was about 5 years after the show had ended. So he's quite clearly, quite quickly trying to move in the other direction. Something I feel as well, if you watch the show, you get a sense of that anyway. You know, I don't know about you, but there's one episode that never fails to make me tear up, is the one where his dad comes back. And like, if you watch that, I might even just buy some clips in, because his performance in that is astonishing. It's just a moment when you're like, oh no, he's not just a quippy fun guy. Like, this is an actor, you know, he's got some range right here.
Yeah, I can't remember those ones that well, but I remember, I think I pretty much watched every episode at the time, but I do remember, you know, him trying to connect with his father and stuff, and that being a big part of the arc. I can't remember that exact episode.
It's just that one where, it's just a bit where he realises that his dad's letting him down, and you know, to go back to James Avery, Uncle Phil has an amazing Uncle Phil speech, like ripping into him and telling him like what it means to be a father.
Yes.
And then Will comes back in and and there's this whole, this is just this wonderful moment where like you kind of realize the sort of, you realize that it's all an act, that the whole, like, you know, him making jokes and silly noises all the time, it's like that facade very quickly drops when he's let himself be vulnerable for an episode. And he gives this amazing speech. Again, I'll just put it in because it's worth hearing. And you can hear people in the audience starting to cry because they're clearly not expecting it. They're clearly like, oh yeah, we're here for a live show of, you know, The Fresh Prince. It's going to be fun. I can imagine by the end of it, everyone was just in tears. Like, what just happened? Like, you know, but that's what I think the best shows do, right? Is they get you laughing and then they just pick one moment to just go an absolute gut punch to you. Absolutely. When you least expect it.
I'm sorry, Will.
You know what? Actually, this works out better for me. You know, the slimmies of summer come to class wearing next to nothing. You know what I'm
saying?
Well,
it's all right to be angry.
Hey, well, why should I be mad? I'm saying, at least he said goodbye this time. I just wish I hadn't wasted my money buying this stupid present.
I'm sorry. You know, if there was something that I
could. Hey, you know what? You ain't got to do nothing, Uncle Phil. Hey, you know, ain't like I'm still 5 years old, you know? Ain't like I'm going to be sitting up every night asking my mom, when's daddy coming home, you know? Who needs him? Hey, he wasn't there to teach me how to shoot my first basket, but I learned, didn't I? Hey, I got pretty damn good at it too, didn't I, Uncle Phil?
You did.
Got through my first day without him, right? Mm. I learned how to drive. I learned how to shave. I learned how to fight without him. I had 14 great birthdays without him. He never even sent me a damn card. To hell with him! I ain't need him then, and I don't need him now.
Will.
Now, you know what, Uncle Phil? I'm gonna get through college without him. I'm gonna get a great job without him. I'm gonna marry me a beautiful honey, and I'm gonna have me a whole bunch of kids. I'm gonna be a better father than he ever was. And I sure as hell don't need him for that, because ain't a damn thing he could ever teach me about how to love my kids. How come he don't want me, man?
I mean, I guess that's, when you think about it, I think we talked before, neither of us have seen even like 5 minutes of the new incarnation of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, just called Bel-Air now.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how a slight change in tone. So the premise of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the premise of Bel-Air is that it's the same story at a high level, but it's, you know, it's not played for jokes. This is, instead of the intro sequence where they tell the story. So the intro, well, first of all, we haven't talked about the intro, the intro theme tune, which is still one of the best things ever.
Oh, it's absolutely. And it will be introducing this episode. Don't worry.
Great. And I've played, I used to just not DJ anywhere near seriously, but when I've DJed at parties and stuff and thrown that down, like everyone gets behind it. It's like magic. But anyway, in that sequence, in the intro sequence, the fight that he has is always played, is super played for laughs, because it's just like he gets on someone's shoulders and then gets spun round a bit. But then the premise of the Bel-Air is that, this is actually getting a fight with someone. Then this, it can be super serious. It can be like the worst thing in the world. And to have to go get sent to the other side of the country, and the other side of the country being America, means you've flown thousands and thousands of miles to get away and to be safe and to have a better chance of life yourself, is super, super dark. And obviously there's comedy in life, but at the same time, taking that sitcom nature away from it, it shows there's real drama to that situation. It's a fish out water kind of commentary. Yeah. It's which it was anyway, but it's more so. That reset is really interesting.
Yeah, I didn't realize actually that's what it was. I just as you were describing, I had a quick look on IMDb, and that's exactly what it says here. That it's basically a drama, and Will Smith is producing on it, which I think is interesting. So. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's one of those, I'd never thought about it before, but you're absolutely spot on. Yeah, the setup just could go in any different way, couldn't it, based on the tone. And and obviously in the version from the 90s, it's the fish out of water. It's, you know, the two different class systems missing each other all the time. And it's that sort of comedy of errors. Whereas, I suppose you're right, actually, when you think about the premise, if you made it a drama, it would fit. And by all accounts, actually, just from a brief sort of look at like Twitter threads and stuff, it seems to be doing quite well. People seem to respond really well to it.
I think a lot of people are vibing it, a lot of people are enjoying it. Just my lack of time at the moment to be able to dig into it.
I know what you mean. But I find that fascinating, especially for something like this that is so beloved, right? Because it's something like this show, you still see it on TV now, reruns, and
it was on Netflix.
A
year ago. I don't know if it's still there. It might well be. But I was watching on Netflix a while ago and really, really enjoying it. But then I was like, I need to watch new stuff that I haven't seen yet.
Fair. Very fair. I mean, I can't blame. This is the thing about sitcoms, is they're just like a comfort blanket, aren't they? And a show like this offers so much fun as well. I mean, we've even touched upon some of the other cast members. I mean, Alfonso Ribeiro as Carlton Banks.
Yeah,
I mean, what an iconic sort of secondary character, I guess, of a sitcom, right? He's amazing.
Well, he's the double act there, really. It's the Morecambe Wise thing, isn't it? He's funny in himself. He's charismatic in himself, but he's grown up on the right side of the tracks, and that's really interesting. And then you have cousin Hillary, who is benefited and been spoiled beyond all belief. And I used to hate her as a character, but at the same time, it's like, well, that's, you know, if you grow up in that kind of with that kind of money and that kind of privilege, then is it inevitable? I don't know.
Hillary, when you quit college, we made an agreement that you would pay your own way.
Hillary, most of these bills are yours. You spend more on clothes than most small countries spend on grain. And you're going to have to find yourself a job, young lady, and you're going to have to keep it for longer than one day.
Okay, you're right. I haven't lived up to my end of the bargain, and I feel terrible. I really do. Okay, I'm making a New Year's resolution to find a job right after Easter.
Don't. Vivian, I can't take this anymore. Hillary, at your age, I shouldn't have to do this.
No, Daddy, no.
This is going to hurt me much more than it hurts you. I want you to reach into that purse and give me your credit cards. Now, young lady.
And Tatiana Ali, I can't remember her character's name.
Ashley.
Ashley, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Ashley, I think Ashley was my favourite after Carlton.
Yeah.
But she was like the right kind of age for Will to turn up and be the cool cousin to my stupid older brother and sister. So she was always under his wing kind of thing, and that was always good to see, and that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I love their relationship, their dynamic. It was just so sweet and lovely. And yeah, I think any of us as sort of bigger families can relate to that. You know, when you're the older cousin. I mean, I am the older cousin out of all of my cousins. I don't know if they view me as the cool one. I mean, that's, you know, to be debated. But yeah, just the idea of, yeah, you having those friendships within your family. And it's kind of something that you said earlier, you know, it is a fish out of water experience for Will. And there's a lot of him overcompensating and overacting. But you feel like the moments that he has with Tatiana, as you say, as Ashley, feel really genuine. I feel like they see each other, you know, in a way. Like, she's by no means a black sheep in her family or, you know, anything like that, but she's very much just somebody who she connects with him.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. and when he's sort of getting shouted at by Uncle Phil or Carlton is talking down to him, it's like she's the one person, it feels like, in the family that he turns to and connects with. And it's really lovely to see. It's so sweet.
It is.
Ashley, you take out the garbage.
Why me?
Because I'm bigger than you. See, that's not fair. That's only because you got them shoe lifts in today.
And then there's, of course, an interesting one, and I don't know much about this, but it's one of those sort of famous moments in the show. We've got two Vivian Banks.
Yeah.
Almost like directly half as well. I'm looking at it. You've got Janet Hubert here, played it from 90... Well, she did right towards the end, but basically she was in 73 episodes, and then Daphne Reed took over about 3 years later and did 75. So it's a pretty even split.
Yeah, between the both, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know much about that? Because I know they addressed it in like a sit-down reunion show, didn't they?
A reunion thing, which is weird. And I meant to watch that again to kind of see what it was about, but I find... So Friends has done reunion. Hasn't Harry Potter done one recently where it's... the main cast kind of sitting down and have a good natter with each other. And again, I'm not sure if I have the time for that. But I know that she came back and that was discussed. And I want to watch that reunion for that specific reason, to see what that, to see what the ins and outs was. But I think initially it's contractually, but I think under the covers, as it were, I think there was something a bit of conflict between Will and herself.
Right. Okay,
that made it an easier decision for her to go, and it's something that, you know, it happened in Roseanne. We had Sarah Chalk replacing the original character.
That's right. Yeah,
and they kept on going. In fact, they kind of kept on going back. At one stage, Sarah Chalk, who then became perhaps more famous in Scrubs, she played for a few seasons. Then the original her character came back. I can't remember what her name is. And then they kind of tag teamed a bit, which is really weird. there is precedent for it. I think I Dream of Jeannie or Bewitched. One of the main characters was replaced by Dick York. There was a Dick York and a Dick Sargent who played the same character, randomly both called Dick.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I mean, there was two Darren Stevens, right? Dick York, Dick Sargent. Yeah, right, as if we wouldn't notice. Well, hold on. Dick York, Dick Sargent, Sergeant York. Wow, that's weird.
So it has happened before, but this is obviously is a clear case of it happening. Obviously, it's happened in the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Terrence Howard and Don Cheadle.
Yeah,
Don Cheadle, who played one of Will's friends in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
I was just about to say, it's one of those, it's like so many of the shows we've talked about. When you look through the IMDb, It's amazing all these cameos that come in. And yeah, you're right. Yeah, young Don Cheadle turns up in an episode, doesn't he? Like, he's chasing after Hillary, I think, is the plot line of that.
I think. Well, no, he's one of Will's friends from Philly, so
right.
He comes to stay over. I think it's called D-Train or something like that. And
yeah,
he comes over and is like laughing at Will almost for having, you know, leveled up to what to use a political term that's been bandied around at the moment. So he kind of mocks Will for leveling up and losing his Philly roots, even though Will is quote unquote the most urban one in the Banks family in Bel Air at the time.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. Yeah, I can't find him on here, but I'll have to watch that again. I'm gonna have to watch this show now after we've had this conversation again. But like, speaking of Will's friends, I mean, famously DJ Jazzy Jeff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, has one of the best recurring gags, I think, in the whole show, of him being thrown out.
Absolutely. And the amount, and the handshake as well between him and Will.
Yeah.
Another lovely piece. I often feel sorry for people like Jazzy Jeff, because him and Will came up together as a Fresh Prince and Jazzy Jeff. That was their duo. They did Boom Share the Room together.
That's right.
Together, and then they've gone their way. And that's, you know, I feel sorry for Alfonso Ribeiro in the same kind of way, because it was, like I say, it was kind of a double team, really. It was about Will Smith, but it wouldn't be the same show in any way, shape or form without Carlton in there.
That's very
true. I'm sure there's some episodes without Uncle Phil or Ashley or Aunt Vivian, but I can't think of an episode without Carlton there.
No, it's true. I'm just having a look. Well, according to this, there's 148, and basically Will, Uncle Phil, Carlton, Ashley, Hillary, and Jeff the Butler, which we can talk about in a sec.
Yeah.
They are in every single episode.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, and then you've got the split between the two actresses playing Vivian. Yeah. But you're right. Obviously, there would be someone they wouldn't really be present. They would just kind of be floating in and out, I would expect.
Yeah, that's probably it.
But you're right. Yeah, you do kind of see them as this amazing double acts, and as you say, when you think about Carlton, especially to Will, he's the straight man, you know, out of the two of them. You know, and there's something about that I think that's just wonderful. But yeah, what about sort of Jeffrey Butler, I think is the
is that
character's
his real name?
That's his name, which I think is hilarious. played by Joseph Marcel. I think hands down one of like the best like sarcastic sort of support characters ever in a show.
I mean, it's great that he can it's one of those roles where he can just come in, do a line or two, steal the episode, and saunter off into the distance.
Vivian, I'm sorry, it's just that it's been so peaceful here since Will's been in Philly. And in boarding school's not so bad. Is it, Jeffrey? Jeffrey went to boarding school. Tell her, Jeffrey.
Madam, I went to boarding school. And then I went to therapy.
Who asked you? Get my lunch.
By the way, sir, the man has a tapeworm.
I think one of my favourite things with Jeffrey was that he was... there's one episode around Christmas where he got drunk on eggnog.
Yeah.
whilst doing his duties, and it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And he's a British actor.
Yeah.
I think he lives in London.
I think so, yeah, Joseph Marcel, yeah. I believe he's still around.
Yeah. I went to a London Comic Con, it was, and he was one of the people behind the desk signing stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't speak to
him, but he was there.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely love that. Yeah, so according to his, just looked at his IMDb, he does a lot more sort of directing, it seems, these days, which... Good for him, man. That's awesome. And like you say, he had the best job in the world in that show. Just came in, like you said, stole the show with one or two lines and then just disappeared. And I kind of love that you didn't know a lot about him either outside of the family. Like, there'll be one or two episodes. I just vaguely remember one where for some reason, they're out in like a hotel or a cabin somewhere. And you see him briefly in like a dressing gown. And he's like addressing a woman that he's with and then just disappears again. And the characters are like, is that? Yeah, what? And it's just like he had moments like that where you sort of every now and then you'd see him outside of the family, but you sort of, it was one of those, it was a very, the writers obviously had a lot of fun just throwing a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah,
giving him sort of weird lore that I'm sure if you sat down and tried to piece it all together, it would be a wild story for his background. But yeah, a really fun character, and you know, somebody again who I just think brings a lot of heart to the show. And as we, from what we can see, yeah, it was an integral part of every single episode. And I guess that's the sort of strength of this, right? Is as much as it's a vehicle for Will Smith, and as you say extensively, DJ Jazzy Jeff as this sort of partnership, it really works well as an ensemble, doesn't it?
Does it say how many episodes Jazzy Jeff was in?
Yeah, according to this, only 46.
Is it? Okay.
I find quite surprising. I thought it would have been a lot more than that.
Yeah. That's a shame. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a family sitcom, so it's called The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but it is like I say, an ensemble that brings everyone together, and everyone's got their own kind of role. Hillary's always the snooty, slightly dumb, super privileged one. Ashley's the cute one. Oh, and then there's another kid, wasn't there, that came in later on, which is weird.
That's another
thing that American TV shows seem to do is like, we're running out of children, let's pull another one out of the bag, as it were. That's a horrible turn of phrase.
No, but it's true. Yeah, Nikki, little Nikki Banks. Yeah, that was unusual. Like you say, it's that kind of, it reminds me of the Simpsons episode with Poochie. It's that kind of thing, isn't it? Of just like introducing a character for the sake of, and he can't be too mad. He was just a kid, you know, it's not his fault.
Oh yeah, I'm not mad at him.
No.
But it's a weird extra dynamic to kind of deal with. And then, I mean, what happens is then was it 6 years it ran? So
yeah.
If they start at high school, then in the States, you've got 4 years of high school. So the people growing up and going through to college, and then you have the challenge of, oh, are they actually going to go to a college as it would do properly? Or they're going to come up with a reason that Will and Carlton are in the same college so they can still continue the sitcom, but then still live in the house. And so they end up going to the same college, even though Carlton had aspirations of going to Yale or something like that, so which would have been on the East Coast versus California, which would have meant obviously things wouldn't have worked out in the way they wanted it to.
No,
and they had girlfriends come and go, and well, husbands and fiancés in terms of Hillary coming and going.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they sort of. It's interesting, isn't it? Because usually for characters like that, you see in typical shows they will pair people up, and that's just a part of people's, like you say, the stage of life they go through. Yeah, I can't seem to remember if particularly like Hillary and Will's or any of the characters really end up with anybody sort of permanently Will, by their side.
I think Will did.
Did he? Was it Lisa? Was that his?
Lisa, yeah. Nia Long.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've got her 16 episodes. That seems to be the longest. Yeah, okay. Surprisingly.
Okay, so maybe I misremember that. One thing I just realized is, and the reason I started it was because it was at the time when, so I wasn't speaking to the microphone then. It was at a time when if you missed the episode and you'd forgotten to record it in VHS, or if you can even be bothered to think about recording on VHS, then you've just missed the episode, or you might be looking to catch it again some other time. So it's not at the glory time now where you would expect to watch every single episode and you could binge every single episode. So I literally have no idea how many episodes I've not seen, and I'm not sure if I've seen the final episode, I can't remember it if I have done.
I'm kind of the same. I think about it now, like just for reruns, I'm sure I've seen most of it. I do remember the final episode. I just remember I had that really poignant moment where, you know, they've just cleared the soundstage, basically. They've moved out of the house, and it's just like really sort of last final shot of Will just looking around and soaking it all in, and it's like that nice moment at the end of the show on. But yeah, I was just thinking about it actually in terms of the length of the show. It's interesting that it was only 6 years. That feels relatively short these days for shows like this. Normally they go on for like at least a decade, don't they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, at that time, was it like 20? So you're saying 140 odd episodes?
Still, it's a lot. So,
I mean, that's definitely a lot. I'm not sure. If someone said to me now, there's going to be a sitcom and it's going to have 20 episodes per season, my heart would probably sink.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah.
So, but that's what they kind of did. They kind of just churned them out at that time. So yeah, 140 episodes is a very good run.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, it worked especially for Will, you know, in terms of his career. You know, yeah. It's sort of like you said, it took him and just put him on another, you know, another universe basically in terms of definitely. What he went on to achieve. But yeah, I just wondering, is there anything that kind of stands out to you about the show, or sort of why you've sort of brought it to the podcast?
I think it was because I think the kind of concept of it as of it being a sitcom was still one of those weird things to me.
Right.
I was like, is it? I mean, it's definitely a sitcom, but compared to like Saved by the Bell.
Yes.
It's, it has more layers to it. And, there was definitely like a level of seriousness, which I think Saved by the Bell is definitely like a kid's show.
Sure.
I don't know why. I mean, it's probably just something, you know, that popped into my head and thought, yeah, I've not talked about that for a while. Maybe because I was thinking about Will Smith and his nomination.
Yeah, yeah. Under different circumstances now.
Or maybe because I was thinking about the Bel Air side of things, which I hadn't gotten around to watching. So there's probably a few things in there that maybe think about it and put it on the list.
Okay. Something that I'm curious about, because you said it a few times and I wanted to unpack it a little bit. When you say you sort of struggle to think of it as a sitcom, what do you think of it then as? What is it in your head?
It's definitely a sitcom, but it's thinking of it as a serious sitcom.
Okay,
it's not for. It's almost skews very young. I think that's just because of the time slot it was put in the UK, but because it's kind of skews young, then I think it's easy to forget of it. Think of it as not a serious show. And I'd say when you compare it to when you talk about Seinfeld and Friends, it took me a while to think of it of Fresh Prince in that kind of ecosystem.
Sure. Yeah. No, it definitely stands out from those for sure. Yeah.
And to not mention the Cosby Show too much, but I would definitely have if someone said sitcoms, I would think of the Cosby Show. I'd think of that would be in there definitely. But right. I wouldn't necessarily think in my head, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is a sitcom.
Okay. Well, that's fair, because we've had discussions on this show before. I mean, I just thought of something Josh Glenn said when we talked about the UK Office.
Mm.
He described it more as a humanist drama, which I thought was a really lovely way of putting it. And he's absolutely spot on. Like, the themes of the stuff it deals with is a lot heavier, and it's totally different from your average sitcom. So, yeah, I think you're right. In terms of when you look at Fresh Prince like that, yeah, it definitely deals with drama. It deals with abandonment issues. It deals with, you know, separation from family. It deals with, you know, class and race and all sorts of things that, like you said, if you compared to other shows that just kind of stayed very clear from that and just had basic sitcoms, it was all about the comedy, which there's nothing wrong with. Like you say, when you look at it, this does seem to be playing in a different ballpark altogether.
And maybe it's because of the bright colours and the, you know, and the theme tune.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, that is iconic. That is like an instant floor filler at any party. As soon as you hear that, everyone runs in. And I'm always curious to see which version they put on, whether it's the full length or it's the shortened one.
I think the full length was only like for 10 episodes or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that happens when people watch The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air for the first time, as it's kind of broadcast in the UK, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then you see the first few episodes, and you're like, oh, right, there's more verses to the theme tune. I didn't know that. And I think that was probably the thing that kind of drew me in at the start was just the theme tune.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was a show at the start. And then it's like, oh, there's this show after this theme tune. And then via osmosis, everyone in the playgrounds singing it, and everyone knows the rap, and just that, and this is a story. And then straight away, as soon as I said that, whoever's listening to it, who knows the Fresh Prince, can go and recite the rest of the rap verbatim, I'm sure. Maybe not the first 10 episodes, the longer version, but certainly the traditional the more recognized version, anyone will be able to recite it, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I like to think, you know, my humble opinion, it's the better one anyway. It's more concise and it gets to the point. And it's unusual for a theme show, for a theme of a TV show to set up the premise of the sitcom so well. Like you say, you hear that, it's catchy and you enjoy it, but you also straight away, you know exactly what the premise of the show is and who the character is in relation to everybody else. You're like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Absolutely, it's probably one of the reasons you could just pick up at any point and know the story, and that's why he's there in Bel Air. Fine, good.
And off we go. You don't have to worry about it.
I do wonder if that's how much knowledge you have before going into other sitcoms. The premise of Frasier, for example, was that this one character from Cheers goes back to his hometown. I guess I think Seattle was his hometown.
I think so.
Moves away from Boston, goes to Seattle, and then he's Frasier from Cheers, but in Seattle, and that carries a bit of like setup that I don't know how important that is, because I knew the setup anyway because I used to watch Cheers before I watched Frasier.
Okay,
but it's still maybe a bit of disconnect between that and other people. It's maybe a disconnect between people who may pick up the show halfway through the first season, for example, and not understand the kind of dynamics of that. But that's something you don't have with Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. At least if you're watching it from the theme tune in, you know the setup, you know the premise, and you're kind of ready to go. There's Will. He's the one from that got in trouble in Philly. And this is the family he's staying with. Okay, fine. I get it now. I get it. I get where I am. Let's go. That kind of setup.
Yeah. And I imagine that would have helped a lot of people to get on board, but perhaps would have felt less intimidated. Because imagine if you're watching it as it's going out and you're like 3 years in, you might think, oh, I've missed a load of backstory. It's like, no, you haven't. It's fine. Theme tune says it all. And you go, okay, we're in. Yeah. It's good. I love it. I just want to ask Kobe, just before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to sort of discuss about the show or anything you wanted to say?
No, apart from I need to perhaps try and rewatch it. I'm going to do a quick search.
Same.
There's an app called Just Watch, which is brilliant. An app and website called Just Watch, and it tells you. So I'm going to do this live, guys. This is like Googling.
I'm doing it.
If you type in a TV show or film, it tells you exactly where it's playing and how much for. If it's on any streaming service you use, and if it's not, how much it costs to buy it. So Fresh Prince. Need to spell Fresh correctly.
I've got the same one up. Yeah, it's a great service. Absolutely. If anyone's wondering, go and check it out. Just Watch is brilliant.
It saved me time. It saved me money.
Oh yeah.
It's not available. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is not available on Netflix at the moment. It's on Apple TV. You have to pay for it. No, it's on Sky. I've got Now TV. Why is this? Oh, maybe I need to tell it. I've got Now TV. So it's on Now TV. Okay. So if you have Now TV or Sky, you can get Fresh, which makes sense because that's where the Bel-Air, the new show, has landed.
Okay, amazing. Well, yeah, and there's a bunch of other options there as well. I mean, I'm with you. I'm gonna have to go and hunt this down and do a rewatch, because I think I'd like to see it all the way through and connect some of the dots, especially as you say towards the end. I think it's well worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna do the same myself.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much, Kobe, for coming on the show. I guess sort of take us home. Where can the good people find you and all the things that you do?
So I have a few podcasts. We talk about Netflix on the podcast called Flix Watcher, which you'll have to join us on, Holly.
I'd love to.
So each of our guests who typically podcast is they pick a film each and we chat about it. Simple. And they talk about The Wire and the TV show The Wire from HBO called The Wire Stripped. I help produce a bunch of other podcasts of various different sizes. So, yeah.
Amazing. Well, listen, I'll be putting links to all of that in the show notes for people to go and check out.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
I think I've even got a few episodes of Flix Watcher downloaded. So, yeah, definitely go and check that out. And all that's left to say is thank you for coming on.
No, thank you for inviting me. Cheers. Glad I can make it happen.
My pleasure. And there we have it. A huge thank you to Kobe for coming onto the podcast and talking all things The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with me.
I hope you guys listening enjoyed that episode as much as I did. Please make sure you go and check out Kobe's podcast, The Wire Stripped, and Flix Watcher. Both are excellent listens with some amazing guests on it. Well worth checking out. I've linked to all of that in the show notes, as well as his Twitter and website, so you can find even more of the work that he does. I'd like to take a moment to say thank you to our resident artist, Alex, who designs the artwork for the podcast. Be sure to check out his work, also linked in the description. If you like the look of the logo of the podcast, then you can reach out to him and commission him for your very own artwork. I cannot recommend the guy highly enough. In fact, I'm so pleased with the work that he did for me, I went ahead and put it on all of the merchandise available for this podcast, all of which can be found on the official Tee Public store for this show. The affiliate link is in the description for you to go and check out. Of course, there are plenty of other ways to support the podcast for free. The best way to do it is to just tell people about it. Word of mouth, social media, all that good stuff goes a long way to helping support this very podcast. You can also go that one step further and leave me a lovely 5-star review or rating on your favorite podcatcher of choice. If you're kind enough to do that, then please let me know via the email or social media links that are in the show notes, because I would love to thank you in person on this show. Thanks again for checking out this podcast episode. Make sure you stay subscribed and up to date for future content. And I'll be back again in a few weeks' time with a completely different guest on a completely different subject. See you then.